Good morning. I'm Rick Mullaney, Director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and welcome to Policy Matters, WJCT's quarterly radio program that takes a look at public policy issues that matter to you and to the future of our city, state, and nation. First Coast Connect and Melissa Ross will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Thank you so much for being with us. On today's program, we are very pleased to have Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, who will be finishing his first year in office next month. That's kind of hard to believe, actually, and is the eighth mayor in the history of Jacksonville's consolidated government. And later in today's program, in the second half of the program, we'll be speaking with Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson, who became president on July 1, and next month will finish his year as City Council President. We will also be taking your questions and comments. If you'd like to join today's conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. Our first guest is Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry. Mayor, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Rick. It's good to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Mayor, I'm going to start off and ask you something directly. You're finishing your first year as mayor of Jacksonville, and I'd like to ask you just very directly, what do you consider to be the single greatest challenge facing the city today?
Our pension crisis. Our unfunded pension liabilities are $2.7 billion. Our pension costs out of our operating budget this year were $260 million. Out of a billion-dollar operating budget, that's $260 million taxpayer dollars, your listeners right now, their tax dollars, $260 million go into pension costs, $280 million next year, $300 the following year, and it will continue to climb. It's the biggest issue facing our city because we're on the cusp of falling off of a financial cliff, and those tax dollars that we're using to pay these pension costs are tax dollars that we're not using for quality of life issues, for the things that we ought to be doing for the people of Jacksonville.
Well, Mayor, I want to talk about that a little bit to find the problem some. I wanted to disclose for our listeners, I am a former city employee and a member of the general pension fund and have a city pension, but I'd like to talk about the 2015 agreement that was reached last year and distinguish that from the referendum that's coming up in August. What did the 2015 pension reform agreement accomplish? And also, what about the escalating payments required to on pensions as part of that agreement?
Yeah, so City Council reached an agreement in legislation in June. So it was after I was elected, but just weeks before I was sworn in, that adjusted benefits of current employees, new employees, but also put required payment streams in. Increasing pension payment streams that will come out of the operating fund. $5 million this year, $10 million the following, $15 after that, and then just over $30 million for in the years ahead.
And that'd be your last year as president, as mayor, isn't that right, the $32 million?
That's right. On top of that, you have pension costs that are increasing just because the pension liabilities are unfunded. The referendum that I have proposed, the solution that I've proposed to solve this pension crisis is to take a half penny sales tax that people pay right now, that people pay today, that is set to expire in 2030, and ask them to vote yes to extend that half penny. So there'll be no additional tax burden. If you pay a half penny today, you'll pay it tomorrow, you'll pay it then. This is a secure source of revenue that will deal with the unfunded pension liabilities. The costs will be shared with those that commute in every day from outside of our county, tourists that visit here. And most importantly, if they vote yes, if the people in Jacksonville vote yes, we will by law be required to close the three pension plans that caused this and collectively bargain and negotiate new plans, plans that represent the market and that are sustainable so this doesn't happen again.
You're listening to Policy Matters here in WJCT. I'm Rick Mullaney with Jacksonville University's Public Policy Institute. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937. 549-2937. We are very pleased to have Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry on today's program, and he's been outlining for us sort of the pension challenge the city faces and the Curry plan to address it. Mayor, I'd like to talk a little bit about how you arrived at this solution to the unfunded liability. What were some of the alternatives that had been considered and the vetting process that you went through in trying to address this pension unfunded liability problem?
Well, one option was to do nothing, which is frankly what's happened for many years. We've had a lot of debates and arguing back and forth and blame on this issue for so many years, and yet we've not solved the problem. And believe me, this is not a sexy issue. This is not an issue that you want to tackle your first term. But as I said when I opened, it is our crisis. It is also our opportunity. It is our moment. Our entire future is on the line. and I'm willing to spend all of my political capital in solving this so Jacksonville's future is bright and prosperous. Other options would be a reorganization of debt. We don't want to travel that road. Some have suggested over the years, during the campaign, there was an argument and there was noise even before about a new sales tax. First, let me say clearly that I think a new tax is a really bad idea. The people of Jacksonville have had tax increase over the years, about 7 tax increases over the last 15, 16 years, if you include fees. So I think a new sales tax would be a bad idea. That being said, if someone thought it was a good idea, it's not viable. You would have to get approval from the Florida legislature and the governor. And I have a high level of confidence that it wouldn't get a committee hearing in Tallahassee. And if it did, Governor Scott, who's been very fiscally conservative and a good steward of our budget, would likely veto any kind of a new tax. So that's not an option. Others have suggested a property tax increase. I am opposed to that idea. I think it's a bad idea for a whole host of reasons. The first of which, it doesn't solve the problem. You can't purpose a property tax revenue for a specific cause, so it wouldn't guarantee to solve this. Nor would that require us to close the pension, the plans that caused this problem. And on top of that, estimates say it would likely be a 30% property tax increase to even begin to deal with this. So my solution is, look, there's no perfect solution here. It's the best in a series of really tough options.
Mayor, we have a number of calls on the line, and Kyle's been waiting patiently. And Kyle, welcome to today's program. Do you have a question or comment for Mayor Curry?
Yeah, I do. I got a question. I want to ask him. Okay, so you mentioned about the half penny. If the half penny was approved, he would. If that half penny is approved, what is the restructured pension plans going to look like?
Okay, Cal, thank you very much for your question. Mayor, what will the restructure plans look like if the half penny is approved?
Well, we would have to, by law, go into collective bargaining, which, by the way, did not happen with the unions every 3 years like it was supposed to in previous years. We'll be doing that now. This passes, we go into collective bargaining. We are required by law to shut the plans that caused this and open new ones that represent the market. If we do not close these plans that cause this, they do not get access to this half penny.
So we have another call from Ira. Ira, thank you for calling in. You have a question for the mayor.
Thank you very much. A very important topic for the city. I'm a U.S. Army Airborne retired, and I moved here 3 years ago. Love the city, but I'm concerned about this whole pension business. Why can't you just declare the pension as not necessarily bankrupt, but insolvent, pay out the existing money in the pension to all the beneficiaries in a lump sum, and start over with the 401k type system? Why can't you just declare that we've messed this up over 20 years and just distribute the money in the account, liquidate the pension, and start over? And secondly, there are hundreds and hundreds of military police veterans who could be hired to take the place of the police and fire who would be offended and want to leave. Thank you.
Ira, thank you very much. Two-part question, Mayor.
Yeah, well, first, let me say I understand the frustration of taxpayers, and as they sit, read their papers, watch their television sets, and see this discussion about pension liabilities that they didn't create or cause. We can't just unilaterally, to answer the question, claim this is insolvent and pay it out. A, we couldn't do it legally. B, if we could, we don't have the money to do it. Again, the money just doesn't exist. Hence, the ask of the half penny extension. In terms of new plans for new hires, we by law have to go into collective bargaining. And my commitment is I will negotiate tough. I will do my job. It's not like in corporate America where you can decide this is what a new retirement plan is going to look like. You have to, by law, go into collective bargaining. So again, I want to be clear to the listeners. We need this half penny to pass. I'm committed to opening new plans that represent the market, that are sustainable, and we can put this behind us once and for all and be a great city.
You're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. I'm Rick Mullaney with Jacksonville University's Public Policy Institute. If you'd like to join today's conversation or if you have a comment, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. Patiently waiting has been Shelley. Shelley, good to hear from you.
Yes. Thank you. I'm a little concerned that the pension plan itself seems to be characterized as the problem when it's actually a thank you and our way of telling our police and firefighters thank you for a job well done, when in actuality it's been the administration of the pension fund not paying into it. When the market was good, the market tanked, and the whole, you know, when the economy tanked, the pension fund tanked like many other people's retirement funds there in the economy. So the collective bargaining process is an important part of it, but and I think that's important to be able to do that every time. But collective bargaining is with the teachers too, and we know that nothing happens with the teachers. Basically, whoever's in charge of the administration on the other end decides what's going to happen. And there's no ability to, or power that is really given to that collective bargaining process for teachers or firefighters or police. I think that's the thing I'm most concerned about, is that the pension fund itself is characterized as the bad guy, but it's actually the administration of it, the poor administration of it, that got us into this mess.
Well, Shelley, thank you for your comment. And, you know, Mayor, she does bring up something that is timely, and that is there has been a great deal of change and reform on the administration of the fund. Would you like to comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, a couple things. Let me state clearly, I've said this in many forums, men and women in uniform, city employees that go to work every day, didn't create this problem. So regardless of where you are on the issue about the benefit packages that employees have had from previous years, these men and women were made promises by politicians, and they built their lives around those promises. To that end, some of those benefits have been reformed, as you mentioned, the 2015 reform that took place over the summer. So clearly, again, I want to state, policemen, firemen, city employees did not create this problem. Bad fiscal decisions over a whole host of years created this problem. The pension fund, I mean, there's administrative issues that have happened there over the years. I have demonstrated since I was in office, if you just look at collectively how I've governed, in charge, unafraid to make tough decisions, from the way I've remade some of the other boards in our city to a whole host of decisions that I've made. The way that I am approaching this pension solution is the same way that I will go into collective bargaining to make sure that the city, that the taxpayer gets a good deal, but that we also negotiate plans that would attract the best and the brightest policemen, firemen, and city employees.
Well, Shelley, thank you very much for your comment and call. We have lots and lots of callers, and Jerry's on the line. Jerry, your comment or question for Mayor Curry.
Yes, Mayor, I realize you inherited a mess, and you have some tough choices to make. I read in the newspaper a while back that the anticipated revenue from this extension, if it's approved, is going to be used as a basis of borrowing more money. So let's say it's 2060, and you and your predecessors have borrowed us up to the hills, and there might be a call for a new tax or an extension of the existing tax. Is that a feasible scenario?
Thank you very much for your call.
That's a good question. So what you read in the paper is simply laid out, the media has laid out what could, scenarios that could play themselves out. That's not necessarily an option we would travel. One of the things that we could do is pass this half penny, which will start in 2030, wait it out till 2030, continue to have really austere, tight budgets over the next 14 years, and then that kicks in to handle those benefits. Any other option, though, and how this source of revenue will be used will not be unilaterally decided by any mayoral administration. It would have to go before city council, a 19-member body, and have a public hearing and a public debate in the budget process. So that's where there's a check and a balance in for the taxpayer and the citizens. It's a great question, but here's my commitment to the caller. We've assessed this and analyzed this. This, again, not a lot of good options. This is the best in a series of tough options. This will solve the pension problem once and for all. We believe that the pension funds, based on our estimates, will be fully funded by 2045 if this referendum passes.
You know, Mayor, the call highlights sort of the multiple steps or phases that you've been going through in the implementation of the Curry Plan. For example, step one in going to Tallahassee, and by the way, a remarkable accomplishment in going to the Florida legislature to create this option for the people of Jacksonville. Then the second step, going to the city council and getting a 19-0 vote to actually place this referendum on the ballot. And then this really big step, this third step, this referendum, this vote of the people on August 30th. And then, of course, this questioner's, the question relates to maybe step four,
right,
post-passage. And sometimes that is a question as to, assuming it does pass, what are your thoughts regarding how we deal with this if in fact, you get this dedicated revenue stream to help solve the problem?
Then we go into collective bargaining. We have to deal with those three plans before we can actually use the source of revenue for the pensions, even though the voters vote yes. Another check and balances. You gotta deal with the existing plans. And beyond that, in the budget cycle, as we do every year, 19-member body of city council, public hearings on the issue. But I want to state this is so important. This issue is so important. Here, you have to vote yes at the end of August, unless you want to travel one of two roads. One would be a reorganization of our debts at some point. That is not a road anybody wants to travel. The other would be somebody's going to impose a 30% or higher property tax increase on the citizens of Jacksonville. I think it's a bad idea, but with a reorganization of debts or a massive property tax increase, both of which are horrible ideas and bad for the city of Jacksonville. We have an existing half penny that is paid right now and shared by surrounding counties and people that travel in to our city from all over the world. This is the best way forward.
You're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. I'm Rick Mullaney with Jacksonville University's Public Policy Institute. Thank you for being with us. We have lots of calls and lots of interest. Jody, you've been very patient. You have a question or comment for Mayor Curry.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning, Jody.
I'd like some greater understanding of this proposal provoking the collective bargaining. That's a two-part question. I'm not sure if I understand you. I don't understand that part of what I thought I heard you say at all. And the second is that it sounded as though this there's a provision out there that we should have been into collective bargaining every 3 years, and that's been going on for quite some time, that we've been in violation of that. I'd like to know whose responsibility it was to identify that issue and our failure to, or the city's failure perhaps to participate in that, and why we're not closer, taking a closer look at that lapse.
Jody, thank you very much. Two-part question dealing both with collective bargaining, where to from now and how we get here.
So here's what happened. And again, this is before my time, but there's a much-debated 30-year agreement. Some suggested that 30-year agreement meant benefits couldn't be changed for 30 years. Others have suggested that agreement had interpretations in there where you could collectively bargain new changes every 3 years. That's a legal debate, and attorneys have been having that debate for years. The other part is the collective bargaining that was done with the Police, Fire, and Pension Board. Should have been done with the unions of the policemen and the firemen. A judge recently ruled on that it ought to be with the police and fire unions, and that is, in fact, legally where it will be with my administration in the years ahead.
How about post-election, post-referendum, Mayor? What about
post-referendum? So we'll sit down with the unions of the general employees, the police, and the fire, and collectively bargain, close the existing plans, and collectively bargain new plans. My commitment is that those plans represent the market, that they are sustainable, that it's something that taxpayers are comfortable with, but that also attract the best and the brightest. If we don't successfully collective bargain that, the half penny cannot go to fund these pensions. The half penny it won't be used to pay down these pensions. So there's a check and a balance in place there.
Mayor, we have lots of calls here on the line. We have Jimmy. You've been very patient also. Would you like to, I lost Jimmy. I apologize. But we do have Tim online from Yulee. Tim, do you have a question for the mayor?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I live up here in Yulee, and I've listened to, you know, this pension plan fiasco for quite some time now. And to be honest, I'm totally on board with whatever you propose. But also, you know, I wonder if, and I know this sounds unpopular, but maybe putting the tolls on some of our roads, because I know you referenced something, I think I heard that you talked about our infrastructure here in Jacksonville. And as I travel, you know, to some of the other cities here in Jacksonville, in Florida, you know, I noticed, like, you know, the they use the SunPass, and, you know, Orlando has a toll. And I know it's an unpopular idea, but doesn't it just seem like that's money on the table when we have people, travelers coming from all parts of, you know, the United States coming into our city, but they're bypassing us, going to some of the other cities. And I just think that maybe that might be an option as well. Thanks, and I'll take my answer off there.
Tim, thank you for your question. Mayor?
Thank you. Again, I believe we don't need new fees and new taxes.
Well,
we have penny that we pay. Pay now that you'll pay then if this passes.
Well, one thing, as you said earlier in the program, this is a revenue issue.
Right.
And we have different discussions of how best to raise that revenue. And the Curry Plan provides that revenue source. But I appreciate the caller's creativity.
I know I do, too. I do appreciate the thinking outside of the box. But let's just talk about taxes and fees for a minute. So we have, going back to the early 2000s, we had the Better Jacksonville Plan. We had a number of fees that were initiated in the mid-2000s. We had a couple of property tax millage rate increases. We had a millage rate property tax increase in the last administration. And for those of that have been in Jacksonville for many years, what the citizens hear, that's about every 2 to 3 years, some sort of a tax increase discussion. And it's always the sky is falling. It's all going to collapse. If we pass this, all will be well. And then every 2 or 3 years, it's the same argument. So taxpayers don't trust their government. And I get that, and I understand that. So what I'm suggesting here is take a half penny that exists. We're not going to impose any new burden on you. And we are specifically purposing this revenue only to deal with this pension issue. Government over the years at all levels has played games with the way they bring revenue in, said we're going to use it for this, then they use it for that. We are legally bound to use this half penny, if this passes, to solve this pension issue once and for all without a tax increase.
Tom, I know you've been waiting on the line. Do you have a question or comment for the mayor?
Yes, two. I'm concerned that one of the principal architects of the fiasco we're in, Mr. Keene, I mean, I applaud the mayor for reducing his gold-plated pension, but he still gets a pretty substantial pension. In spite of the fact it seems pretty obvious that the man was more interested in feathering his own nest than exercising fiscal responsibility. And I just feel if I'm going to have to pay, then, well, he should pay too. As for my question, I was wondering if anyone had looked into the possibility of continuing the sales tax and supplementing it with a modest increase in property taxes.
Thank you very much for your question, Tom.
Yeah, there are some that think that a property tax increase would be a good idea. I think it's a bad idea. I'm not, again, tax increases and fees every 2 or 3 years over the last 12 plus years. Politicians continue to make the same argument. I'm not traveling that road.
Mayor, we're really short on time, but I want to ask you one last question. I want to thank we have a number of people calling in. I want to thank all our listeners and callers, but can you place this in a little bit of historical perspective? 1967, almost 50 years ago, this consolidated government was created by referendum. You've now proposed a referendum for this August 30th. We've had a number over the last 5 decades. How would you put this in perspective for the people of Jacksonville?
Well, Rick, I think you said it best. You certainly are an expert on city government, having served in so many capacities. When I saw you at the JU commencement speech that I gave a few weeks ago, you said you think this might be the most important vote since consolidation, and that there have been a lot of important votes over the course of years in between these dates. So I think you're right. This is our city's future hinges on this vote. If you want to sit back as a citizen and just be upset and complain about the pensions and vote no on this tax, you can do that and feel good about yourself, but we will fall off of a financial cliff, or somebody will come behind me and give you a massive, massive property tax increase.
Mayor, that's the Thank you for being on today's program. We're going to take a break right now. I want to thank our listeners for being with us. We're going to take a break, and after the break, we'll be joined by Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to Policy Matters on WJXT.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, works in some of the most dangerous places in the world.
I remember at first I did have nightmares.
We follow two doctors in South Sudan to understand why. And we find one of the reasons is a tiny patient.
Yeah, so that's her. Okay. She's the sickest person on the ward, probably in the hospital right now.
Inside MSF, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
If you've ever been stranded in your car, you know it's nice when help arrives.
We're this first responder agency who's a little bit of fire, a little bit of EMT, a little bit of towing, a little bit of police.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Atlanta's heroes. That's Highway Emergency Response, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT's Great Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins June 2nd and continues through June 13th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Welcome back to Policy Matters, and thank you very much for being with us. This is WJCT's quarterly radio program on public policy issues that matter to you. I'm Rick Mullaney, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. We appreciate you staying with us. And on this part of the program, we are very pleased to have Jacksonville City Council President Greg Anderson.
Greg,
it's great to have you here. I know you're about to finish your year as City Council President. And today, for our listeners in particular, we thought it would be a terrific thing, really, to have the executive branch perspective, and then to bring in the legislative branch perspective. But we may get some questions and comments from our viewers. So if you have a question for President Anderson, or if you have a comment, please give us a call at 549-2937. And I apologize to all the list questioners from the first half of our program who we weren't able to get to. But if you'd like to join us in this half of the program, if you have a comment or question, 549-2937. Mr. President, I'm going to start off with the same question for the legislative branch that we asked to the executive branch.
Okay.
You're about to finish your year as leading the city council,
right,
legislative branch for the only consolidated government in the state of Florida. What do you consider to be the greatest challenge the city of Jacksonville faces today?
Well, it continues to be financial stability sort of over the long haul. I had a chance to listen to what Mayor Curry said, and I agree with him. I think it's our unfunded pension liability, because that is keeping us from being all that we can be as a community. The percentage of our budget that is taken up by that contribution continues to rise. It's over 20% now. And I put it in this perspective. So if you assume we've got about $1 billion general fund budget, 20%, let's call it $200 million. Think if we could save 10 or 15%. And the money that we could use there for other things to invest in our community. So in my opinion, it's the biggest single financial liability we have.
Well, for our listeners, I want you to know that our council president is the senior private banking officer at EverBank, and has a tremendous amount of financial expertise, and was gracious enough to actually come out and give a guest lecture at Jacksonville University to the graduate students.
That was fun.
In the Master's in Public Policy
program. You asked a lot of tough questions, Rick.
Well, I bring that up so that you can share with our listeners part of that expertise, because you broke down that $1.1 billion budget and you broke it down in such a way as to explain how pension costs are crowding out other investments and what it means to the future of our city. Could you comment on that?
Well, you're exactly right. If you look at our financial model and how much we are having to contribute out of that budget towards just pension liabilities, it just really crowds out our ability to invest. And so if you look at the financial statements, you can kind of see that pretty clearly. But I think even more importantly, when you begin to do some projections, when you look forward and you say, you know, well, 5 years down the road, does this get better? Are we getting worse? The reality is that unless we find a sustainable funding source for this liability, it's not really going to get dramatically better.
And we're going to talk about that referendum in just a moment, but we do have some calls. And I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. I'm Rick Mullaney with Jacksonville University's Public Policy Institute. If you'd like to join today's conversation, you have a comment or a question, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. We have Jimmy on the line from the West Side. Jimmy, welcome to the program.
Good morning, guys. My call was really for the mayor, but it's for any city official. I applaud the mayor for his courage to take on the pension. He is right. It has to be dealt with. We can't keep kicking the can down the road. But nevertheless, I would like to ask y'all, city council and mainly the mayor, look into those departments, the firefighters and the police department. They deserve to be taken care of, but you got some double, triple dippers in there. You got cousins, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, mistresses that don't deserve to be on the payroll and that should be off for the younger and newer, more qualified people to hold those positions. That's where you need to find the money at. And I'll listen to your answer off there. Thank you so much.
Jimmy, thank you for calling in. And, you know, that question maybe does highlight one of the distinctions we talked about in the first half of the program is the difference between sort of the pension reform package relating to benefits, which was last year, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, and the referendum that's coming up on August 30th. So how about addressing Jimmy's question with regard to, you know, payments that are going out from the fund?
Right. Well, so Jimmy, thanks for calling this morning. I think the first of all, you know, the public safety officials, the policemen and the firemen who are, you know, out there every single day protecting us, you know, they deserve to be taken care of. I mean, they take care of us. We need to take care of them. And as far as cost efficiencies, I can share with you, at least on, you know, from my perspective, for the last 5 years on city council, in particular, the fire department has undergone a lot of scrutiny. And so I think that'll continue to be pushed forward both on the police side and the fire side. We're always looking for places where we can save. We save money. We need to be very efficient. You see us deploying technology to that extent as well. So you asked Rick a little bit more about sort of the benefits versus the. So I'm gonna.
And your role is in the council president. You had your first term as city council, and then of course you're in your second term. And what was the role that you played and the council in the 2015 pension reform agreement? And how does that relate to what we're going to be doing in August?
Okay. So the way that I look at it, Rick, is that it's sort of a continuing journey. So we've taken a number of steps towards stability, sort of long-term financial stability. And the first part was to best we could sort of stop the bleeding. And we did that with the 2015 agreement, which bifurcated new employees and existing employees. So new employees going forward have a different benefit plan, and that's appropriate. I mean, they get to understand the benefits going in, as opposed to some of our public safety officials who've been serving and were under the impression they had certain benefits. So there were a number of adjustments that were made. Most of those were to the future benefits, and it shouldn't be downplayed. So to give you an example, that reform package saved about $1.8 billion over 35 years. So that's a good start, but we really were never able to get our hands around a permanent funding solution, and that
you mean
was
to the unfunded liability issue,
right? Well, yeah. So kind of in round numbers, the normalized cost, so what it costs to operate the normal plan for existing employees was somewhere around 28%, but the cost to the city was about 115%. So the difference between the 28 and the 115% was the unfunded liability. You can see the vast majority of the cost for us was that unfunded liability. So what we really struggled with was finding a sustainable funding source for that. And did the mayor address the extra contributions that we put in?
Yes, somewhat. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay, sure.
You're talking about the 10%, is it referring to? Right. As part of the plan.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let me just turn to Larry, who's been waiting a long, long time. Oh. I think he's very interested in asking you a question, Greg. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Larry. Good morning.
Larry?
How are you doing today?
You've been very patient. Thank you very much. Do you have a question for the city council president?
Yeah, I'd like to ask. When I hear the budget for $1.1 billion, but no one talk about the revenue that's coming in. And I mean, isn't there a difference between the budget and the revenue and money coming in? And what is that difference between the two?
Go ahead.
Well, Larry, thank you. I'll tell you what, he's asking that question of the right person, because I know you're an expert right on both the revenue and the expense side. But let me just, for our listeners, you're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT. If you have a question or comment for City Council President Greg Anderson, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. Larry's question is, we hear about the expense side and the $1.1 billion. What about the revenue side? And I know that for the class at Jacksonville University, you outlined that in some detail, but
right,
how about just the biggest tranches of revenue that we get?
Sure. Well, so first of all, let me answer the question. From my standpoint, I think of them sort of the same. So when you think about our city, essentially the revenue that we're bringing in matches the expenses for the most part. At least that's the way you start out with the budget. Sometimes you get improvements in expenses. Sometimes you get improvements in revenues. Sometimes you lose some revenues. Sometimes you lose on the other side. But essentially, that's the way you start out with the budget. So the biggest component of the revenue side is our real estate taxes, ad valorem taxes, and that's about 52% of the total budget. And to put that in perspective, because we're talking about the pension cost, so even with all the funds that we receive from real estate taxes, that does not cover the total cost of public safety. So additional contributions are on the revenue side are sales tax. So we get some state sales tax, which has been performing very well. And then contributions from other business units, namely JEA.
Mr. President, I guess you'd agree certainly, though, that as important as those revenue sources are covering the operating budget, the magnitude of the revenue needed to address the $2.7, $2.8 billion unfunded liability is a separate challenge.
That's right.
And so, anyway, we had a caller online who we just missed. If you would like to join the conversation with our city council president and have a question, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. This is something that the mayor touched on, and with your finance background, I'd like you to address sort of
sure
the separation of sort of the benefits issue, which came out in the 2015 agreement, and the referendum, which addresses the unfunded liability. But also, and you've mentioned this before, the 2015 agreement had escalating payments mm-hmm. that are required from the city. And I know you're putting together the budget, upcoming budget. Last
yeah.
year, it was an increase of $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
The upcoming budget this year is $10 million. And can you describe what that means for future years and why the revenue demand is so great?
Sure. The 2015 reform plan did a number of things. One, it put in place some sort of improved governance, and I think the mayor mentioned the fact that collective bargaining now is with the business units rather than with the fund. But in addition to that, we put in place some board oversight that had not been there previously, namely in terms of investments. So it saved about $1.8 billion. But to get it get the reform passed, one of the things that Council President or Councilman Gulliford offered was a escalating funding provision. And so the way that works is that this year in this budget, out of the general fund, out of that $1.1 billion, we paid an extra $5 million. This year, in this next budget, it'll be $10 million. Following that, it's $15 million. Then it goes to $32 million.
That's a lot of money.
Over the next 10 years. Now, if you follow that out, in about 14 years, you're about 80% funded, which is considered sort of funded as far as these plans go. But if you look at it, that is a significant draw on our general fund. That's the fund that we use to keep libraries open. It's the fund we use to mow and have our parks in good condition. And so pretty much everything that you think about a city operating with. So the additional expense of that, especially when we get to the fourth year where it's $32 million, that'll start to really eat into the budget.
I want to turn to some of our calls. Callers, Coleman, thank you for being with us. Do you have a question or comment for our City Council President?
Yeah, sir, good morning. I think the elephant in the room that nobody seems to address is the fact that City Council could solve this problem and place the burden on those of us who are receiving the benefits of the police and fire service in this community, and that is by increasing property taxes and beginning paying now rather than dropping this burden off. Is that not true?
Well, Coleman, thank you for your question. I think this is an important question because we need revenue, and a lot of different revenue things were considered, everything from pension obligation bonds to a new sales tax to franchise fees. And the property tax question is one that Coleman brings up. And Mr. President, what do you think about his thought of the city considering a property tax to address this as opposed to the referendum?
Right. Well, I think with the so first of all, you know, there are sort of a limited number of revenue sources that are available to the city, the largest of which is the is property taxes. A couple of years ago, when we were faced with a budget that was very bleak, we were going to have to close six libraries and fire 300 police officers. The city council did took a very brave action, and that's increased property taxes by 14%. And because of that, I think you're starting to see a community really, you know, move forward. You're starting to see some investments, and so I think property taxes, you know, they're certainly you know, always on the table. Right now, that's not something that any of us are really interested in doing. We certainly are looking, hopefully, towards a successful ballot initiative in August.
We have another caller on the line. It's Brad in Arlington. Brad, do you have a question or comment for our City Council President? Hello, Brad? Hello? I think we may have lost Brad on the line, so we'll go to additional caller. Somehow I think we got disconnected there, a couple of those callers. Let me go back to that discussion on the property tax. One of the things that Mayor Curry mentioned the first half of the program was the challenge of a dedicated revenue source. Mm-hmm. And future city councils and future mayors not being able to sort of tinker with where the money goes or its amount.
Right.
And with property taxes, that is certainly one of the challenges. How about commenting on that in terms of what you're trying to accomplish in this referendum? And I do want to talk about your role and your position on this referendum.
Okay, sure. I think that's a great point, Rick. So the sales tax, if it's approved, the extension would be specifically dedicated towards the unfunded liability to pay that down. And the beauty behind that is that it couldn't be changed. It's always going to be dedicated to pay down the single largest financial liability that we have. Property taxes, if we did increase them, then they could be used for a variety of things. And so if we're really seeking to address that liability and do it sort of very directly, sort of connect these two, then the sales tax is much more connected.
We do have Brad. Brad, do you have a question or comment for? I'm sorry we lost you earlier. I did want to get back to you among other callers because of your patience. But do you have a question or comment for our City Council President?
Yes, I just a quick question. I'm no expert at the
the pension system and how we negotiate things with the public unions, but is it true that the police and fire department can retire as early as 38 years old, and couldn't that be some sort of a part of the pension problem and should be involved in the negotiation?
Brad, thank you for your question. I think the question highlights, again, this sort of distinction between the 2015 agreement that addressed pension benefits and the referendum, which really addresses more pension debt. So how about commenting on this notion of sort of the public's concern and Brad's concern over actual benefits and this idea, for example, of starting to receive pension benefits at age 38?
Right. So thanks, Brad. So there are a number of factors that really created this liability. Early retirement, I think, certainly plays into that. And under the previous plan, after, I think, Rick, it was 20 years, a public safety official could retire. Now, the reality is probably most of them didn't. Right. But going forward with the plan that we've got in place now, there are some age requirements that are put in as well. So, Brad, you're right. That was an area of discussion during the reform package.
Listen, we're still taking calls, but Mr. President, I want to make a little bit of shift. But
sure.
I don't want to end today's program without giving you a chance to address your year as City Council President. What do you consider to be the greatest challenges you faced over the past year as far as the city? And what about what you would rank as the greatest accomplishments? And certainly pension has been a big part of the agenda.
That's right.
But what would you, and with your finance background, for your year as council president, greatest challenges, greatest accomplishments?
Well, so first of all, thank you for the question. And I, for those of you who are listening, I want you to know it's been an amazing year. It's been a real honor serving you and serving with the city council. As you know, Rick, we had 11 new council members that were elected about a year ago. They're seated, and so one of the first things that your president set out to do was to make certain that they got in place and became effective as soon as possible. And I will say that happened remarkably quickly, and we've got a very highly effective group of folks on City Council. My three priorities have really never changed. My three priorities have been consistent. Number one is public safety. Number two is financial stability. Number three is to invest in our quality of life. That's been consistent for me for 5 years. And so from a public safety standpoint, you saw this budget where we increased funding for the police officers by $1.6 million. That added 80 new officers to the streets, and we certainly need them. And they're coming online now. You're also starting to see the CSOs, the community service officers, come online as well. Those are great force multipliers, and it works very well because somebody, some young person could start there and ultimately end up as a trained police officer and be very effective. So, the second piece of that, of course, is financial stability. And I think you're starting to see some improvements. We saw real estate taxes increase by 5.3% year over year without a millage rate increase. So we're trying to move in the right direction. The pension liability is the single biggest issue that I think we face. One of the accomplishments that I think has a little bit gone unnoticed, but it was a significant accomplishment, was re-signing the agreement with JEA. In our budget, the JEA contribution amounts to about $125 million, and the agreement that we had with JEA for that contribution was coming to an end. So from my standpoint, I wanted to make certain that we had the stability of that agreement in place, and we were successful with that. So the last thing that I'll mention is the quality of life. And just this weekend, for those of you who are listening, remember we have Jazz Fest. This is, I think, the 35th year for Jazz Fest, started in 1981, and it's back downtown, which is a great opportunity. So come downtown this weekend And I think what you'll see is, you know, a continuing investment in sort of the culture of Jacksonville, arts and music. And this weekend's going to be a great weekend.
Mr. Council President, we're short on time. One last comment. Sure. Looking forward, the referendum is August 30th.
Right.
You and the mayor both say this is the greatest challenge facing the city of Jacksonville. Do you support the referendum?
I do.
Okay. Well, I wish we had more time to explore that,
okay.
But we're out of time for today. I want to thank you for being on the program. Thanks to City Council President Greg Anderson and to Mayor Curry for being on today's program. I want to thanks to all of you who've called in and for our listeners. You've been listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. Our producer of this program is Sean Birch. Join Melissa Ross tomorrow at her usual time at 9 a.m. This is Rick Mullaney with the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Thanks for joining us. Hope you join us again next time.
Thanks.